Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fishing Bamboo, An Angler's Passion for the Traditional Fly Rod, by John Gearock, narrated by David Colacci. When you love something, you have the capacity to bore everyone about why. It doesn't matter why. John Irving. Introduction. Some things have changed in the 17 years since I published Fishing Bamboo. For one thing, I fish graphite rods more often than I used to for the usual reasons of convenience and peace of mind. I've come to see bamboo rods as less of a social statement and more of an unencumbered preference, so I no longer have to agonize over what kind of rod I grab on the way out the door. The logic behind the decision is purely aesthetic, so I couldn't explain it if I had to. And, of course, I don't have to. There are some compelling practical reasons for choosing graphite over bamboo. Four-piece graphite rods are so common now that they're almost standard. Some of them cast beautifully, and they're really slick on airlines. I often travel with 2 6-weights and 2 8-weights that will cover anything, and four-piece graphites fit nicely in a duffel or in a short rod case that goes through most security screenings as your personal item. Four-piece bamboo rods, with all those nickel-silver ferrules adding weight and dampening the action, have never been successful. That's why you almost never see them. And with the lifetime guarantees some graphite rods come with, or inexpensive replacement sections, breaking a graphite rod is just an annoyance, instead of the heartbreak the same accident would be with an irreplaceable old bamboo rod. For that matter, some guides are still uncomfortable having bamboo rods in their boats for fear they'll get broken. For the record, they're no easier to break than graphite, but some people are more squeamish about them, and granted, there are plenty of opportunities to break rods with 2 fishermen, a guide, and sometimes a golden retriever stumbling around in a 16-foot drift boat. I used to insist on bamboo, but I guess I've mellowed. If nothing else, I realized that making your guide uncomfortable isn't the best way to kick off a day of fishing. But then none of that amounts to a hard and fast rule. I'm too easy on myself for that, so I still fish bamboo rods from boats, those owned by friends or by guides who don't look twice at a wood rod, and I still get on plenty of airplanes with 3-piece bamboo rods. When I fished the old Spruce Creek Club in Pennsylvania with bamboo rod maker Walt Carpenter, I never thought of bringing anything but bamboo. The same goes for any small stream or any trip involving cutthroats or brook trout, including the Bruiser brook trout in Labrador. I've been there 7 or 8 times now. I've lost track, but never without the Labrador Special. That's a bamboo rod Mike Clark made for me in 1994. An 8-foot, 3-piece, 6-7-weight, with a detachable 2-inch fighting butt designed to fish anything from medium-sized dry flies to streamers to deer hair mice, and to land heavy, stubborn fish. Then again, I caught my biggest Labrador brook trout ever on a different rod, an 8-foot, 3-piece, 6-weight Leonard Tournament that was built in the 1920s. Best guess, the fish weighed less than 10 pounds, but more than 9, and it bent one of the tips of that old Leonard into the shape of an apostrophe. I keep meaning to have it straightened, but never quite get around to it. And when I was invited to fish Judge John Volker's famous, and still secret, Frenchman's Pond in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, I brought a pretty old Wright & McGill Granger 8.5-foot 5-weight and got the chance to cast Volker's own Morris Kushner rod. I'm not normally intimidated by bamboo rods, and usually preach that they're just fishing poles and should be treated as such, but the late judge's heirloom rod scared me to death, and I couldn't wait to give it back to my host. In other words, I still do most of my fishing with split bamboo rods, often with a 4-piece graphite stashed in the truck as a spare. In over 40 years of fly fishing, I've broken surprisingly few rods, and only 2 of those were bamboo, and both were my fault, but I still make it a rule to bring a spare, so if I do break a rod I can keep fishing instead of going home with my tail between my legs. For that matter, if a friend breaks a rod, it's easier to hand him your spare graphite rod than an old bamboo dripping with happy memories. Of course, it depends on the friend. I once lent Jim Babb a sweet old 7.5-foot F.E. Thomas special that I thought he'd enjoy. He likes bamboo rods as much as I do, but he'd flown out to Colorado from his home in Maine with nothing but graphites for the same reason I might have. Not long after we separated on a small creek near home, he took a bad fall, bruised a bone in his leg, and barely managed to hobble back to the truck, where I eventually found him. After he told me the story, he added, "By the way, I managed not to break your rod." And I was secretly proud of myself for worrying about my friend and not even thinking about the rod. And I once loaned my 8-foot, 4-way Charlie Jenkins to Ed Engel, who was including Charlie in a book on bamboo craftsmen he was working on and wanted to fish one of his rods in the interest of journalistic accuracy. Ed took Jenkins to the South Platte River and proceeded to hook a very large rainbow. He said he thought about breaking the fish off to save the little 4-weight, then decided that if I'd been there I wouldn't have asked him to do that, so he went ahead and landed the fish. I guess I'd have done the same thing. For the most part, the bamboo rods I had when I wrote this book are the same ones I have now. With only a couple of exceptions, I haven't gotten any new ones or unloaded any old ones. I didn't realize it at the time, but I now think writing a book about bamboo rods puts a coda to several decades of chronic accumulating. Put simply, I already have more bamboo rods than any sane man needs. I'm embarrassed to say how many, including some that I think are as good as they get. Those would include an 8-foot, 5-weight Hedden President, a 7.5-foot Maxwell Era Leonard 39DF, and an 8-foot, 5-weight San Francisco Winston made by Lou Stoner that's a twin of the one on display at the Golden Gate Casting Club, except that theirs looks unfished and mine doesn't. One of the exceptions was a sweet 4-weight I got from Walter Babb, Jim Babb's older brother. Jim had told me that Walter was a fine rod maker, but I didn't think much of it, because what else would you say about your own brother? But then when we went down to East Tennessee to fish with Walter a few years ago, I asked to try out a couple of his rods, and they really were exceptional. I told him that, and then told myself that I didn't need and couldn't afford any more bamboo rods. I'd only been back home in Colorado for a few weeks when I broke down and called Walter at his home in Sweetwater. I asked if he could make me a 7-foot, 9-inch, 3-piece 4-weight. He said he thought he could add 3 inches to a 2-piece, 7.5-foot Payne taper he liked and re-engineer it as a 3-piece. Long story short, I like the rod so much, there are now a few local streams I won't fish with anything else. There was also the 9-foot, 7-weight Payne I got in a trade with George, a retired doctor in his late 80s I used to correspond with. George and I exchanged long letters, on paper, with envelopes and stamps, about everything from bamboo fly rods to books to politics to the vicissitudes of getting older. And one day he asked if I had a Mike Clark rod I'd be willing to part with. A loaded question. George said he'd always wanted a Clark rod, but that Mike's waiting list was 5 years long, and he was afraid that at his age he might not last that long. In other words, if you don't take this puppy, it's going to the pound. I said I did have an 8.5-foot, 6-weight Clark that I didn't fish very often, because I liked my 5-weight Clark in the same length better. And George offered to trade me a 9-foot Payne with a detachable 2.5-inch fighting butt. It was a cagey offer. He knew that in terms of pure monetary value, the Payne was worth more. He also knew about my soft spot for the long Payne rods that Jim Payne himself said were his best. And he knew that two of my favorite long rods were 9-foot, 6-weight and 9.5-foot, 8-weight Paynes, and that this one fell right in the middle, more or less completing the set. For my part, I knew that George, wisely I think, cared more about what he wanted and less about what things were supposedly worth. I also knew that he'd given away some of his bamboo rods to favored guides as part of their tips, saying he knew he was old and slow and creaky and kind of a handful. In that way, he reminded me of my mother, who, toward the end of her life, also began to shed once-treasured material possessions. It got to the point that I couldn't admire anything in her house because she'd give it to me. Anyway, we made the trade. Sometime later, George's letters stopped, and I learned that he'd died. I don't know if he ever got around to fishing the Clark, but I fish the pain every chance I get. While we're on the subject, I have to say that two of the rod makers I mentioned in this book and considered to be friends, Charlie Jenkins and John Bradford, have also since died. I'm glad I have rods by both of them, and not because they've increased in value now that there won't be any more. I'm also glad that Steve Jenkins, Charlie's son, is still making bamboo rods under the family name. I got my four-way Jenkins cheap from a guy who was hard up for cash. I should feel guiltier about that than I do, and the first time I fished it I ran into Charlie on the river. What are the chances of that? He was delighted that I was fishing one of his rods and shyly asked how I liked it. When I said it was one of the best four weights I'd ever cast, he blushed. Charlie was the only rod maker I've ever met who didn't seem the least bit impressed with himself. I have two of John Bradford's rods. The first one I bought from John about 20 years ago. The second was a more recent gift with a story behind it. I'd published an essay describing the three stages of a fisherman's life, with stage three coming in late middle age, and wondering if there was a stage four. Sometime later I heard from a reader who said that stage four is when you check into the fanciest fishing lodge on the river and then leave in a huff because the pasta served at dinner was too al dente. Okay, but then a few months later a rod tube arrived with John's familiar return address in Fort Worth, Texas. It was a 7.5-foot, 3-piece, 5-weight rod that the accompanying letter said was built on the famous Payne 197 taper that John had tweaked a little here and there. Many rod makers claim to tweak classic tapers, and some do it better than others. As William Bennett once said, it takes a steady hand to bend rules well. And John was one of the rare ones who could do it well. The rod came with ferrule plugs that were tied to the top of the rod bag because, John said, I want you to use the ferrule plugs, and I know if you don't tie them to the bag, you'll lose them. The model designation written on the shaft was Stage 4. John didn't produce all that many rods in his lifetime, partly because he spent years doing museum-quality restorations, and partly because he was a perfectionist's perfectionist, and this rod shows it. It's entirely plain, with blued hardware and a cap-and-ring reel seat, and completely flawless, right down to varnish that looks like glass and a cork grip as smooth as a baby's bottom. I later learned from a mutual friend that John curtailed work on the rod for a month to concoct a wood stain that would make the maple reel seat spacer exactly match the color of the lightly toasted bamboo shafts. Naturally, the rod casts as good as it looks. I haven't fished it for a while because my rod maker friend Vince Zonick has it. He's studying every aspect of it with the same level of attention you'd give to the Dead Sea Scrolls. Most of my bamboo rods didn't start out with those kinds of emotional backstories. In the usual case, I saw or heard about a rod I thought I'd be interested in for one reason or another, and either bought it, traded for it, or let it go because it cost too much. Consumerism 101. My collection of bamboo rods, or accumulation, as I prefer to think of it, could be described as eclectic, or haphazard, or as evidence that I had no idea what I was doing. I've only bought one rod in the interest of completeness, and it was a Granger. I had 7, 7.5, 8, and 8.5-foot Grangers, as well as 3 of the 4 9-footers, so I got a 9-foot 9043 to fill it out. Of course, a collector would be quick to point out that there are still 3 9.5-footers and a 10-footer, but none of those interest me as fishing rods, so I've left them alone. Owning as many bamboo fly rods as I do can't be seen as anything but an indulgence, but I have managed to be of service a few times. Many young rod makers work from classic tapers that they got from books or websites without ever seeing the actual rods they're trying to reproduce. And now and then I've been able to string up the real article and let one of these guys lawn cast with it. This can be an eye-opening experience. As one man said, "Yeah, I guess tapers are about more than just numbers." A precious few of my rods came right from the craftsman who made them. Others came from used rod dealers, and some, including many of my Grangers, a couple of Heddens, and a Phillipson, turned up at flea markets and garage sales for what now looks like bargain prices, even in 1970s dollars. The Goodwin Grangers and Wright and McGill Grangers were made an hour's drive away in Denver. They were popular rods, and for decades, a steady trickle of them came from cleaned-out garages, attics, and basements, and were priced to move at yard sales. That's how I developed my Jones for Grangers and my soft spot for 9-foot rods. 3 out of every 4 used rods in Colorado were Grangers, and 3 out of every 4 of those were 9-footers. Apparently Jim Payne wasn't the only rod maker who thought that a fly rod reached its ergonomic sweet spot at 9 feet. My favorite 9-foot Granger is the 5-ounce 9050 that casts equally well with either a DT5 or WF6 line. It's very close to the 9-foot Payne 208. So close that to realize the Payne is ever so slightly smoother and more powerful, you'd have to fish them side by side for days. Which, of course, I've done. Grangers came in various grades at various prices, but I've always liked the favorites, with their fussy intermediate wraps. I like the antique looks of them, but I also think they cast better than the same models in other grades, even though the tapers are the same. I believe that's because the slight but still significant weight of the extra thread wraps and the extra varnish it takes to coat them slows the action slightly and makes it more fluid and sensual. At least that's my story, and I'm unlikely to be talked out of it. Those of us who love bamboo rods have a seemingly endless supply of what Thomas McGuane called unfounded opinions. That's one of mine. Others follow. John Gearock, Larimer County, Colorado, 2014. 1. Fishing Bamboo. You should understand that I'm writing this not as an expert on split bamboo fly rods, but as an enthusiast with some opinions. In Live Water, Tom McGuane tells us about asking his so-called Uncle Ben, "Was my father a good fisherman?" Uncle Ben smiles and says, "No, Tommy, he was not, but no one loved it more." That's how I am with bamboo rods. Plenty of people know more about them, cast them better, and have seen more of them, but no one loves them more. At first, it was probably as much an accident of timing as anything else. When I started fly fishing, the standard fly rod was fiberglass, but there were lots of fly fishers who thought bamboo rods were still the best, or who at least talked and wrote about them with reverence. Those fishermen included some heavyweights like Ernest Schwiebert and Arnold Gingrich, as well as any number of guys you never heard of. Graphite rods were starting to show up then. It was the 1970s, the era of disco and Watergate, and some outrageous claims were being made for them, usually having to do with unbelievable casting distances, monumental strength, and the huge fish you'd catch if you'd only embrace the new technology. Advertisers believed then, and still believe now, that if you just showed a picture of a guy holding a big enough fish, you could claim he caught it because of the brand of underwear he had on, and people would run right out and buy it. Most of the fishermen I knew then considered these graphite things to be experimental toys for saltwater headhunters, But in the early 1970s, Al McLean said he thought graphite would replace fiberglass during the next decade, which is pretty much what happened, at least in the mass market. Of course, that was the same market that said fiberglass had replaced bamboo after the Second World War, and for that matter, that spinning had replaced fly fishing. But then, considering the simple-minded way businessmen view reality and the glassy-eyed way some folks just go along with it, I guess that was true enough. People tend to get the politicians and the fishing tackle they deserve. It may have been another coincidence, but about the time I got into fly fishing, I also decided there should be one thing in my life that was of high quality. One thing, because that's probably all I'd ever be able to afford. And it wasn't going to be clothes, or cars, or houses, or jobs, or pedigreed animals, or fine books, or fine liquor, or antique furniture, or matching china, or snakeskin cowboy boots. It was going to be fly rods. And the best fly rods were bamboo, period. Back then, I made the same mistake about bamboo that others were beginning to make about graphite. I thought there was some magic in the material itself, and that any rod made from the stuff would be wonderful. The H.L. Leonard Rod Company was still in business then and still making bamboo rods. So were Orvis, R.L. Winston, and Thomas & Thomas, plus a bunch of independent rod makers who somehow hadn't gotten the news that bamboo had been replaced. But I was working for pretty close to minimum wage, so naturally my first bamboo rod was the cheapest one I could find at the time, an 8-foot, 3-piece, 7-weight Ed M. Hunter, bought new over-the-counter at Dave Cook's Sporting Goods in Denver. It was the cheapest one I could locate, but it was still a little on the expensive side. Over time, I'd get used to that. In the last 25 years or so, I've spent more than I could really afford on bamboo fly rods, although I can't bring myself to say I've spent more than I should have. I mean, it was my money and my decision. If I had better fly rods than I did jobs, clothes, or pickup trucks, so be it. I was exercising my passion as well as I could, and I was damned lucky to have a passion. I didn't know it then, but that particular Hunter was made by DeBell in Denver. Before that, the Phillipson Rod Company had made rods under the trade name of Ed M. Hunter, and they were actually pretty good. But the one I got was a club, although I didn't realize it until I got my hands on a sweet little 8-foot, 5-weight Granger Victory with a quick, graceful, forgiving action. It was magnificent, and the Granger, being an old, used fishing pole, was cheaper than the new Hunter had been. As I remember it, I unloaded the Hunter, bought a Fluger Medalist reel, and about broke even. Then I went on to fish the Granger so hard I eventually had to get it refinished. I still have it. I think that was pretty much it. The first really good fly rod I ever owned was bamboo, and it was at a time when that was considered only slightly unusual for someone my age. After all, every article you saw in those days about getting started in fly fishing still gave you three choices of fly rod materials: fiberglass, graphite, and bamboo. Glass was cheap and good, graphite was new and high-tech, but bamboo was still the benchmark. On the other hand, my first really crappy fly rod was also bamboo, so I accidentally started out with a nice perspective on the whole business. Some of my oldest fishing friends also use bamboo. Ed Engel and I got into writing, fly fishing, and bamboo fly rods more or less together, and for better or worse have stuck with all three. The first time I went fishing with A.K. Best, he strung up a beautiful little 5-weight Hedden President, as if it were just another fishing pole. We got along in lots of other ways, too, but there was something about both of us pulling bamboo rods from dented old tubes that started things out on the right foot. Not long after that, A.K. introduced me to John Bradford of Fort Worth, Texas, a fine rod maker and one of the best rod restoration men around. John refinished some of our rods, including A.K.'s great Hedden, which came back looking better than it had new. When I heard there was a guy named Mike Clark who was making bamboo rods right down the road from me, I looked him up, started hanging around his workshop, and we became friends. I learned most of what I know about rods from Mike, and I got the third rod he made professionally. After quite a few years of driving heavy equipment full-time, learning rod-making part-time, and using failed blanks for fuel in the wood stove in his primitive shop. He actually didn't start out to make rods for a living. He just wanted a bamboo rod, and being the self-sufficient, hands-on type, he thought it would be cheaper and more fun to make one than to buy one. But then people started offering him money, which has a way of changing everything. Now Mike makes rods full-time and is back-ordered for well over 2 years. With the typical rod-maker crankiness, he says he guesses it beats driving a bulldozer. My first Mike Clark rod was an 8.5-foot two-piece five-weight that I still fish. I told him I wanted a powerful, authoritative five-weight that could also handle light tippets and be capable of some delicacy. You know, a rod that would let you fish size 22 blue-winged olives on 7X in a moderate gale. It does that. I have no idea how, but then that's why I'm writing about bamboo rods instead of making them. AK liked mine so much he ordered one just like it. My serial number is 833, the third rod Mike made in 1983. AK's is 841, the first rod in 1984. Some makers number their rods more for their own information than yours. For the record, Mike and I are not in business together. If we were, I wouldn't be as quick to talk him into closing the shop for a few days to go fishing, but he does make three models of rod with my name on them. There's the 8.5-foot five-weight and an identical six-weight he calls the Gearock Best Special Tapers because AK and I both use them and like them. And there's the 7-foot 9-inch five-weight Gearock Signature, complete with the full intermediate wraps that I asked for and that Mike gripes about every time he makes one. In return, I have one of each of those rods to fish with, plus the shot to the ego every time another one goes out the door, which seems like a pretty good deal to me. Over the years, a handful of people have told me I should get more out of it than that, usually the same people who don't know what the hell I'm talking about when I say I'd rather keep a good friend then get a few bucks a pop on fly rods. A lot of my friends fish graphite, too, and I don't hold it against them. But it's surprising how often bamboo rods just sort of materialize. Susan Peterson has a 7.5-foot Charlie Jenkins that comes out for special occasions. Roy Palm has been known to fish Little Creeks with a 3-weight Gary Howells. When A.K., Ed, Mike, and I were camped at Roy's place on the Frying Pan River last September, Roy's lawyer dropped by, the talk turned to rods, and he ran out to the car to get his Todd Young Parabolic, the first one I'd ever seen, and so on. Oddly enough, I ran into a fair number of people with bamboo rods in Alaska a few years ago. Up there, where your average fly fisher chunks lead on an 8-weight graphite most days, it seemed like half the fishermen I met had a little bamboo dry fly rod tucked away for grayling. At Ilyaska Lodge in Iliamna, Ted Gherkin had a collection of Thomas & Thomas limited edition bamboo rods on the walls, unfished and under glass. Still, he was surprised that I was fishing for sockeyes with a 9.5-foot, 8-weight Jim Payne light salmon rod. He was amazed at the weight of the thing, something like 9.5 ounces fitted with the detachable fighting butt, slightly over a pound with a Peerless size 6 salmon reel, and although he was too polite to say anything, I got the impression he thought I must be trying to prove something. I was, of course, if only that at the time, the lovely old pain had cost me no more than I'd have paid for a comparable new graphite from any one of a half dozen companies. Anyway, I have a copy of Ted's book, Gamble at Iliamna, with an apparently cryptic inscription that reads, To John Gearock and His Strong Right Arm. By the time I got into them, bamboo fly rods had bred a subculture of professional and amateur rod makers, dealers in used.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?